It's time for Sports Lit 101. Bruce Pratt with us, as he is every Wednesday afternoon. And Bruce, a conversation that we actually had a few weeks ago about this terrific article on the impact of climate change on hockey in Canada.
Yeah, it's something that we are dealing with in Maine even faster probably than parts of Canada. And I'm really interested in talking to our guest, Adam Ali from Queen's University. Are you with Queen's or are you with Toronto now?
Hi, I'm actually with the University of Toronto now.
Okay, that's what I thought. I saw that in the thing and I remember. So you're at the University of Toronto. There is nothing, no greater debate these days in Canada that I know of than, is our identity hockey or is our identity not hockey? Canada's changing. It's become a much more multi-ethnic nation. But even if it is hockey, hockey is undergoing some really major changes. Climate change is one of them. And can you lay out for us the major reason why that's true?
Yeah, absolutely. And first of all, thanks for having me today. It's a pleasure to be here. You know, to your question, I think one of the major debates that we're having, certainly at the community level within the nation over the past number of years, has been the impact, as you said, of climate change in terms of actually decreasing our outdoor skating season. And that's been something that's been on the watch both at, you know, high federal levels, provincial levels, but also within our small town municipalities as well. And as I'm sure in previous conversations you've had, there's been lots of grassroots programs that have popped up trying to address some of these issues within their own communities. And you know, I think one of the points that you mentioned there, Bruce, around our Canadian identity is certainly a poignant one with our continuing increasing level of diversity as a country. But you know, hockey still remains, I think a big part of our identity for both a lot of positive, but also some negative reasons as well. One of the things I think that we've talked a lot about is, you know, what's meaningful about losing that outdoor skating season, where so much of our sort of nostalgia around hockey really, and our sort of romanticization of the game really comes into play. And that's certainly been a big debate over the past number of years.
We're seeing, of course, the effects of climate change worldwide, but it's even more pronounced in Canada. And can you explain why that is and what especially it means when I say Arctic amplification?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the top of mind points that's come from the science, which I'd have to point to my more harder science colleagues as a professor who tends to stay within the sociological realm. One of the big learning processes for me over the past number of years has been learning exactly what you've talked about around Arctic amplification. And one of the main things that's affecting Canada specifically is the melting of our northern tundra, which is going to lead to both, I think, warmer temperatures within the northern part of our very, you know, southern populated part provinces, but to that point also increased melting across our glaciers that could result in some increased water levels as well. So we're dealing with a number of different issues you know, within that area. But the biggest loss, of course, has been because we are one of those northern nations, the decreased days and weeks that we have for skating each season. And we're seeing that in some of our most iconic cities, including the Rideau Canal in our nation's capital of Ottawa, where I think the most recent calculations that I've looked at have projected that we're going to be down to maybe 1 to 2 weeks of a skating season in Ottawa by 2050, which is quite staggering.
It is. And one of the things I was thinking about and is doing this research is that, yeah, the game started out as an urban game. It's a Montreal game in one mm-hmm. sense, because that's where the first natural ice was. But we know that, you know, they're playing hockey in the 1800s in Nova Scotia, all across different parts of Canada. It seems to me that this is going to be particularly difficult for the identity of French Canadian hockey players, not just because I'm a Franco, but that is the whole tradition of the ice, the pond, the guys who didn't live in the city from the little towns, the Gordie Howes from the plains of Saskatchewan. If hockey is only played indoors, what does that mean for the socioeconomic makeup of the players?
I think that's one of the points that you mentioned that I think myself and my co-researcher Jay Johnson from the University of Manitoba have been really, really interested in trying to understand more, because as you mentioned, if with the move more indoors, and one of the things that we also talked about is there's already a lot of movement indoors with the increasing attention to organized sport, which in the context of hockey really lends itself to an indoor game, and what we're losing with that is more of an unstructured form of physical activity through hockey, through skating, and many other outdoor activities during the winter time. So I think one of the things that we try to get to in our research and try to understand a bit more is exactly about what that impact's going to be. And one of the findings, unfortunately, is that it's going to decrease the level of opportunities for those from neighborhoods with lower socioeconomic status, which we know tend to be also like racialized neighborhoods and minority neighborhoods. So one of the questions that we're also really interested in researching, in addition to some of this work, is the impact that's going to have on some of our newcomers that join us from other nations. And as we know, that happens very consistently within Canada. The other thing I'll quickly point to as well is the Francophone history is certainly rich, and the Black history of the history of Black hockey in Nova Scotia and the Maritimes is also an important part of that history as well. And these consequences are not they're certainly not shielded from the consequences of what's happening now as well.
One of the other things I wanted to ask you about is if you go back in sort of hockey history, especially writing about hockey, you could start with Scott Young's Bill Spunska stories and how if you want to be Canadian, you not only learn the game of hockey as a spectator, but you try to learn to play it. And right. We had Courtney Seto on recently, and she talked a lot about how that dynamic changes in a place like Vancouver, a place where there's not an outdoor skating season, has never really been a very big outdoor skating season. How much of the romanticism of Canadian identity in hockey is likely to help drive a movement to try and reverse climate change? Can hockey work that way?
I think it's an excellent question. I think that is something that we've been asking ourselves, those who are really interested in this research. And the romanticization piece, I think, is really important, because when we romanticize hockey in Canada, it's always romanticized in a particular way as well. We tend to, and this isn't true necessarily for everyone, but we tend to romanticize it as happening within some of these rural places on frozen rivers that or frozen ponds that never seem to end, that are vast with a mountain backdrop, and certainly I think within if we utilize imagery such as that, then that can be I think powerful, but we also have to I think be realistic about the limits of some organization at the professional levels. I do think that if change is going to happen, it's going to come from many of the grassroots organizations at the community levels within cities and municipalities, both in our small towns but also our urban areas as well. I mean, in the city of Toronto alone, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of small outdoor rinks, some that are run or identified by the city, and some that are just run within small neighborhoods. So and of course that's probably the same in Montreal and other cities on the East Coast as well. So I think if there's going to be a critical mass of social movement towards trying to reverse the effects of climate change through hockey, then it's going to happen, I think, on the ground.
We're talking with Adam Ali here on Downtown. One of the most fascinating parts of your article, I thought, was dealing with the Heritage Classic and the idea that this celebration of this tradition of outdoor hockey that's staged to paint a very clear image of what that's all about is about as far from natural as you could get.
Right, yes. Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to remember now if we mentioned it in the article, but perhaps the most obvious example of that is the outdoor game that happens at least up until these past couple of years with the pandemic, happens in California each year, whether it's the LA Kings and the San Jose Sharks or Arizona, etc. So yeah, I think, and those Heritage Classic games were such an important part of that lawning and romanticization of the game. And I think it did. It sort of hit its mark in those first couple back in the mid 2000s. But I'm sure you two have probably talked about this on the show as well. From a spectator perspective, I'm not sure how much runway it actually has, at least within Canada. I'm not sure about the States, but within Canada, I don't think it has quite the impact that it used to. So in addition to it being, it being framed as this sort of return to the elements and return to the natural game of hockey through a very that it's framed that way, but is staged in a way that is quite unnatural. I'm also wondering about its significance or lack thereof as it's continued within Canada specifically.
Well, I think what's one of the most interesting things is if you could just go by sheer number of professional hockey teams, there are more in the state of Texas than there are in any other state in the United States. And when I couldn't figure out why it was popular along the Rio Grande, somebody said, when it's 110 degrees outside, it's much nicer to be in a hockey rink. I never thought, because right. I've always thought, I grew up playing outdoors. Even in Connecticut, we could play from Thanksgiving and until the baseball season began on outdoor ice somewhere in the hills. Now that is impossible. But thinking of it, that makes the drain on the, that makes its environment, hockey's environmental impact just grow enormously in a bad way if we have 65 or 70 new hockey rinks in Texas every couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the tensions within this desire to, or between the desire to really grow the game in non-traditional areas that we know the NHL and other organizations are really interested in doing. What's the environmental cost of growing the game? We know, I'm speaking as a Toronto Maple Leaf fan who has absolutely benefited from the growth of the game, because I'm not sure that we would have Auston Matthews on the Leafs right now if Wayne Gretzky didn't go to LA back in the early 90s. I am absolutely someone who's benefiting from that, but at the same time you do have to wonder about whether from an environmental standpoint it's actually worth it to have leagues running in climates where even more energy is required, and that's certainly a very complex and difficult question to begin to address.
It's interesting too when you talk about the value of outdoor rinks. Obviously access and opportunity is a key part of it, but I also found it interesting when you talked about the fact that it got communities involved, that kids could go out and clear the ice themselves, that they could play without supervision at a time where I think everywhere youth sports is so loaded with too many adults, that was an opportunity that kids had to do something largely on their own.
Yeah, and I think that was really one of the big points for Jay and I in terms of our research was we want to create some good evidence that, and the evidence is there really from work that's been done beyond us that shows that organized sport is not necessarily the best way for the greatest amount of youth to become fit and healthy and increase their bodily autonomy and physical literacy, that it's actually creating opportunities for unstructured and limited or unsupervised physical activity opportunities. Those are where we're actually going to, I think, increase both the wellness from an emotional but also physical standpoint, and also provide more agency to our kids. You've already mentioned it, but the increasing attention and with it, I think, anxiety and stress and pressure on kids in organized sport is something that we could have a whole, I'm sure that you've had many other segments about as well, but that we could have our own whole segment about and the pros and cons of that. So one of the take home points I think Jay and I wanted to get across within that paper and in our work stemming from it is outdoor hockey is important because it provides these opportunities for kids that don't actually happen very often within indoor hockey arenas.
There's a wonderful Dave Gunning song, a great Nova Scotia songwriter, has the chorus, I think, is down to the lake, to the pond, to the river, there's a game going on and it's going on forever. And that, right, to me was a great sense, because Canadians mostly do not play hockey in high school. Your hockey is outside of the school system, whereas in America, in the hockey states, it very often is part of the school. Until, of course, we now have hockey academies like we had ski academies, right, and it becomes the part of the rich. Do you see any movement in Canada to sort of loosen up on young kids, or are they still trying to find the kid who's an atom that they think is going to be the next Gretzky and just keep driving him into that organized kind of games, travel tournaments, all that kind of thing. Is that still as strong as it was?
Yeah, I would personally say so. I mean, I think we've been talking about, you know, in addition to organized sport and, you know, the pros and cons of that, one of the big things that we've talked about in my field too is this idea of early specialization. And there's tons of really good research that's been done scientifically, sociologically, that shows the dangers of early specialization for the you know, maturation and development of our kids. And unfortunately, that still happens. Academies are growing in Canada, and they're growing in Canada because they are also competing with those in the States as well. And that's not to put our our troubles on the States by any means. We've got plenty of issues surrounding the growth of academies and specialized schools, whether it be for hockey, basketball. I'm sure you've talked about as well has also become a bit problematic as well. But I don't necessarily see it changing any time soon. Unless there's, again, more of an effort to really, I think, change our perspective on what sport can be, and to champion more of a participatory route where we can still have our super competitive and super skilled citizens, kids, individuals go and compete in professional leagues. But what's really missing in Canada, and this also comes into play with our long-term athlete development plan, is that we don't really have a great plan for those who don't fall into those competitive streams. We tend to lose them over the course of their childhood and into adulthood. So that's certainly something we also need to focus on.
Is there acknowledgement, understanding at the governmental level that this is a problem?
I think there is. I would say, Sport Canada is our governing body, governing federal body when it comes to sport policy. And I do think it's on the radar for them, and it's something that's important. I do think in terms of prioritization, because it is, I mean, we're not talking about a small issue here. We're talking about a complex multi-layered issue, and we're also talking about an issue that is funded well by lots of capital too. So I think that there are certain barriers that are stopping us from having meaningful conversations about that. But I also, with that said, I do know that there are many advocates, myself included, who are pushing for perhaps a bit more meaningful conversation on that.
Well, I would like to see every winter in front of every pond like there was when I was a kid, no shovel, no skates. You know, if you're not willing to shovel it off, you can't skate. But I also was wondering, do you think that the professionalization of Olympic teams has had a big role in this, that we, we're trying to seed our Olympic teams with NHL players, we're making it more of a nationalistic thing than it ever used to be. Hockey, I mean, hockey was get to the NHL, right? Yeah, we wanted to play for U.S. or Canada. Do you think that that's had a deleterious effect on particularly youth hockey?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I'm not sure about hockey specifically. I do know, from an Olympic perspective, that our in the late 80s, early 90s, and then into the early 2000s, Sport Canada and the federal government started investing funds to increase our competitiveness at various Olympic games. Vancouver 2010 was sort of the beginning of that within the most recent Olympic era for Canada. And one of the results for that, the deleterious results that you mentioned of that, has been that money has been funded into sports that are the most competitive at a cost to those who aren't necessarily. Now, hockey obviously is not going to be included in that, but from a more philosophical perspective, I think the movements when it comes to policy on the part of our government has really, I think, shown that we're more interested in competitiveness and doing well at the world level on a stage such as the Olympics, and the other side of that, or the result of that, is obviously less of a focus on participatory based sports. So I do think that from a more global level, if we're talking about Canada as a nation in terms of its sporting opportunities, I do think that we do have an issue with focusing too much on competition and less on participation at a more mass community level.
Well, Adam, we've really enjoyed talking to you. I could do this with you for hours because it's something
that's fun.
I really, really care about. And maybe we'll have you come back on and talk about your article on the ecological modernization of the 2014 sustainability report by the NHL, because that's got a lot of Gary Bettman double speak in it. You could probably help us
untangle. Yeah, we'd love to talk about that.
But thank you so much for being with us today. Hockey's big here where we are, and it's a game we love. And we border two Canadian provinces and only one other U.S. state, so we sort of feel like we're half Canadian anyway, eh?
Yeah, thanks for that. I was going to ask who's the team that tends to be cheered for in Maine? Is it Boston?
They're mostly Boston Bruins fans, but I'm a diehard Rangers fan, though I grew up first as a Habs fan until I moved, so, you know.
Okay. Ray, I not to get too off topic, but the Rangers are going through quite their own controversy right now.
Yeah, they sure are, and I'm going to see who they bring up to take care of Wilson tonight.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate
Thank you,
it.
Adam.
Thanks again. That's Adam Ali, and his piece with Jay Johnson can be found at World Leisure Journal, and really interesting, thought-provoking stuff.